One dark and stormy night, while riding down the line, railroad bill and engineer said, "Boy, we'll have to fly. We've got to be on time to meet old number four. So swing the call, we'll make it, boy. I never ride no more." While in the rear box car, a lonely hobo lay, heading for his mother dear, who on her deathbed lay. A weary hand to brush away a tear, not knowing his last drive was run and fate was drawing near. When through the darkened night a headlight bright did gleam, above the roar of rolling wheels a whistle loud did scream. As down around the curve this mighty train did roar, the black smoke rolling from the stack came flyer number four. Their last long drive was run. There on the track the hobo lay, his days of life were done. And as the golden sun sank slowly to the west, his dear old mother gently smiled and closed her eyes in death.
And good morning, boys and girls. It's Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here next to Terrible Tommy, Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. Yeah. Easy for me to say. Yeah. It's what is it the hell today? It's the 1st. December 1st. Boy, we made it. How about that? Now it's a countdown and all the crazy-ass shopping for Chinese junk. Yeah, these people go down and they spend all their money and put it on their credit card, and then they ship it across the country, pay postage and everything, just to get this Chinese junk. And it's really crazy. It's Jewish holidays. That's what they are now. It's entrepreneurial. That's what they say. That's a new word for Jewish. Entrepreneurial. And they got to make it all on a couple of weeks. And that's their profit for the rest of the year. Oh, jeez. If you're going out and playing that game, you're crazier than a loon. I haven't played it for years. Anyhow, it is the 1st, and we're still at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Go on up there to our website and read our crawl on the latest news. Just like on Times Square, man, we're getting uptown here at the in the bunker. Yeah, in the hee-haw place. And let's see, what else is going on? Oh, I know what we're going to do. We're going to run a show of another show today. This is a show I did with Werewolf. What's his name? I think it'll be on here. He asked me to do a show with him, and we covered a lot of territory on this show. Some of it's quite distasteful because it lifts up the rug of the right wing and peers under it, all those little creepy things. And some of the things that I don't really like to talk about, but if you're a young person in this struggle, you need to know. You know, you need to know. The only tribute I've seen to George Lincoln Rockwell was on this movie, probably produced by Jews, George Lincoln Rockwell International Airport. How about that? That's sad, isn't it? Well, anyhow, I'm not going to go through it again because you'll hear about it on the show that's coming up. And if you have any other questions about anything I talk about on that show, well, just ask me. I don't hide anything, really, you know. Maybe that's my problem. Well, I hide things from some people, yeah. You know who. They're everywhere. So here we go with the show I did last week, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Let me tell you what it means. This means war. 25th, 2015, right here on RadioWerewolf.com. I got a very special guest coming on tonight, the one, the only, Terrible Tommy, Mr. Tom Metzger, the living legend himself.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me today.
You hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, I just cut my show a little short today. Time caught up with me here. History is being made.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming out with me today.
No problem. I try to get my stuff done during the day. Usually I try to get done by 1 or 2 o'clock. And if only in an emergency, I'll come down in the evening.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work, but, you know.
What's the length of your shows you do?
Oh, usually about 2 hours.
Yeah. That's pretty long. I only do an hour show every day.
Well, yeah, I only do it once a week, so.
Oh.
Yeah, I couldn't do a show every day. I don't have time for that. And
yeah. Well, I'm pretty well retired. In fact, I am retired from my main occupation, so I'm sitting here collecting. Obama keeps me going here on Social Security. I love that nigger check that comes in every month.
Hey, you earned it.
Yeah, I worked hard for many, many years, I'll tell you. But when the TV started being made in China, they lost me. I used to do servicing on TV. And up until that time, things were going pretty good, but the price of TVs went so far down, I couldn't afford to even work on them, just throw them away and get another one. That's what people did.
Yeah, right, because they make TVs. You can't even work at it anymore. You try to get parts for them, it's impossible.
Right, and then the big screens that cost a lot more money, or did, they're not so bad now, but there's that micro stuff in the circuitry. It's like working on a watch.
Right.
You know, so anyhow, I got out at the right time.
Yeah, because I had an MP3 player in the screen. It just cracked. It wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, I'll contact the manufacturer, get a new screen. I'll just take it apart and do it myself. Well, they wouldn't sell me just the screen.
Yeah.
Plus, they're like, oh, if you mail it in, we'll repair it for you, but it's going to cost you like $50. I'm like, I only paid $20 for this thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It doesn't even really pay to fix the stuff anymore.
No, it doesn't. It's too bad because it eliminates a whole lot of jobs for white guys, you know. Used to make pretty good money as a technician, you know. And now you got to be a super computer person.
Yeah.
My son, and my brother or son-in-law, he's a super-duper engineer, but I couldn't design a pot to piss in.
Yeah, you got to have an electrical engineer to work on any of this stuff anymore.
Yeah. I thought of getting me a really good Jew technician and keep him in a cage down here. Just take him out when I need him.
Feed him some matzo balls. He'll be happy.
Yeah. I was supposed to do a show with some gal from Vice TV network this morning, and she never called up, so.
Huh.
Oh, they're like, I don't pay any attention. I don't give them much time anymore.
Right.
I say, just go to my website. Everything I've ever done is up there.
You get hundreds of free hours of content.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to one interview you did not that long ago. I think it was like September with somebody. It was only like 10 minutes long.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes I'm glad it's only 10 minutes long because these reporters are such idiots. I mean, we don't have good reporters like there once was. Nowadays, they're dumb. They don't know anything about history. They don't know hardly anything about geography or anything else. And you talk to them, and it's difficult to get across to them, and you have to keep saying, well, didn't you know this?
Mm-hmm.
Or didn't you know this happened in 1965? Don't you ever read?
No, they just go to school just to read off a little teleprompter or a script, and that's all they know. They can't think outside the box or anything past what they learned.
There's almost no investigative reporters around anymore that are any good. And I must say, most of them are on the left.
Right. Yeah.
In fact, I get a lot of my stuff from the left.
Yeah, me too. It seems like they do a lot more work and kind of go outside the box, don't really toe the line so much as the right does.
Yeah.
Like, right there, they all say the same thing. It's like a bunch of parrots.
Yeah. That's why I say, if you need a lawyer, never hire a conservative right-wing lawyer. They don't know shit. You can go in their office and look like the law books have been on the shelf for 50 years and never been opened.
They're too worried about their image.
I've said, you want a good lawyer? Go out and find the crookedest Jew you can find. Like the mob.
Yeah, I've always heard that, too.
Yeah. Well, I went into court in L.A. over a stupid deal, but anyhow, that was years ago, and I forget the name of the guy, but he was the mob attorney, and the judge was deciding on a free attorney for me, court appointed, and I said, I don't want this guy, and his head spun around on his shoulders, because he was the big mob attorney in L.A. My buddy told me to ask for him. Well, of course, I didn't get him, but I got the judge's attention.
That's always the best way to go. You come in there, they think you're some evil Nazi, and then you come in here with some little Jew lawyer.
Yeah.
Throws them off.
Yeah. In fact, the Jew attorney I had for quite a while, the JDL attacked him. He had a Corvette, and they keyed his car and everything. He had to take the same treatment I was getting.
Yeah, they do that, too. They always go after the lawyers nowadays.
Yeah.
Like they do with Ernst Sundell.
Yeah. Oh, Christie. They go after Christie, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a long time. I met him a couple of times. Wait a minute. Did he die? I forget now. I think he might have died. I guess Ernst is still going.
Yeah, Ernst Sundell's still around. I didn't hear about Christie at all, though. Wait, you know, now that you mention it, I think maybe he did.
He had some kind of a sickness, and I forget what it was.
Yeah, I'm not really positive about that.
Bert Sundell, I was disappointed with because I used to be close to Ernst and went up there to Canada and did shows with him in his studio and all kinds of stuff. But I think he decided because I was such a hot commodity, I mean radical, that I was hurting him more than helping him, and maybe I was, I don't know. But one thing I did, I warned him not to come down here to the United States, to stay up in Canada. I said, they're going to grab you down here, Ernst. And he didn't listen to me because he was hot for this gal he married.
Right.
And next thing you know, they got him, and he's over there in Germany. He did about 4 years, I think.
You know, I don't think it was just you. I think after all his legal crap and then after he got out, I think he kind of just cut ties with everybody and everything. Because I heard, this was like a couple years ago, I heard him do an interview, and he didn't say anything about the Holocaust. He didn't even want to talk about it. All he really talked about was what he went through.
Mm.
And I think he was just kind of cutting ties, and he didn't want to deal with it anymore.
Well, that gal he married was a sort of a weird one. She was a hot commodity with the National Education Association, and you can't get any more red than the National Education Association. She wrote these books, and then in one of her books, she said they asked her whether she had Jews in the background. She said, "Well, I think I am Jewish." And I said, that's a strange gal for Zondel to marry.
Right.
Anyhow, those guys are more off into the right wing, Liberty Lobby, all those guys. You know, I'm not with that wing.
No.
I try to make myself so objectionable that people will stay away from me.
See, I do that too. You know, everybody's talking about this alt-right crap now, and I just don't get it. I'm like, this is like the same conservative stuff they've been doing for the past forever.
Yeah.
And they just changed the name.
Yeah. They never get a new program going, you know?
It's like all these people are supposed to be Jew-wise now. It's like, big deal. They were back in the 50s.
Sure they were. I was quite involved in the early 60s is when I got involved, and hell, we knew all about the Jews and all that stuff way back then.
Right. They try to
guys writing about it long before that, too.
Absolutely. Now they try to make it seem like this is a new, brand new thing that's coming around.
Well, also the right wing's got this fetish that anything, if the weather turns bad, it's the Jews. if your basement floods, it's the Jews. Everything's the Jews. Well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's one thing I don't actually understand, or I try to stay away from. But people, you know, everything's the Jews.
Yeah. I've known a lot of working class Jews, and a lot of them, I knew one guy, he hated the rabbis, and he used to get on the stage with Gerald L. K. Smith, who was anti-Jew, a preacher back in the old days, and he'd get up there and rail against the rabbis and the Jews, and he's a Jew.
Right. Or what's that one guy's name? That chess player guy, Bobby Fischer.
Oh, Bobby Fischer, yeah. He was giving him hell, too.
Brother Nathaniel. That guy's a little weird, but...
Yeah, I never could quite understand what's going on there. I mean, who needs that get-up like that? I don't understand. It's sort of, to me, it takes away from your credibility.
Yeah, that's what I always thought, too. Plus, you know, you look at him, there's something not quite right with that guy.
Yeah, he's probably a Jew himself.
No, he is a Jew.
Well, he is a Jew.
Oh, but he converted to, I don't know, some kind of Orthodox Greek or Eastern. I think it's Eastern Orthodox. That's what that get-up is. He's some Orthodox Christian.
Did anybody ever tell him you can't convert? You're either you're a biological Jew or you're not.
Right.
You know? You can't convert your genes. However, most of the Jews are not race at all. They just play at being a race.
You know, that's like the old age question, is if they're a race or not. And I kind of lean towards that they are. You know, just like you said with the genes. Genes are genes.
Yeah, but a close study of the Jews and the Hebrews and all that kind of stuff, you'll find that they've been mixed up for centuries. I mean, you know, they came out of Egypt, a mixed multitude of all different races and all that kind of stuff. So They're a hybrid bunch.
Right.
I mean, you got your Ashkenazim, and then you got your Sephardic, and the guys running Israel have been Ashkenazim Europeans, and then you got the Sephardic. It's ridiculous.
Right. Then you got Chinese Jews and Mexican Jews and.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But you know, deep down inside, they still got that Jew gene in them.
Some of them do partially, but you know, you can become a rabbi and 48 hours of instruction. They used to advertise in the papers around the country, become Jewish in 5 easy lessons, you know.
It's like all those weird cults they had going around in the 70s where you can sign up and be a reverend of something.
Oh, that was McKinley, and what was his name? Kinsley. Yeah, some guy signed me up in that and gave me a certificate that I'm a rabbi. It's hanging on my wall here. Yeah.
There you go. The Jews start giving you crap. You go, look, I'm a rabbi. I got the documentation.
Well, I went over there to Israel, you know, here a while back, and a guy paid my way over, so I said, what the hell? And so I got in there, King David's tomb, and all these Jews, these whacked-out Orthodox Jews, they surrounded me, and they were determined that I was a Jew. I said, no, I'm not a Jew. Well, we can make you a Jew. I mean, you know.
You weren't wearing a little beanie, were you?
They gave me a beanie, and I put the damn thing on and wore it around for a while, you know. I keep one in my briefcase in case I want to infiltrate a synagogue or something. Back in the 30s, the National Socialists here in this country were infiltrating all these synagogues, and they all had a yarmulke.
Yeah.
Carried it with them. Yeah. And then when I was walking around in Israel, I decided maybe to have a little cover, so I bought an Israeli Army T-shirt and a Jerusalem Police Department baseball cap and wore it around. A couple of guys asked me, did you serve? I said, yeah, I was in the Israel Army for 5 years. I retired, you know. That's what I told them.
Yeah, they'll believe anything. Especially if they think you're one of them.
Yeah.
Then you're your best friend.
Yeah, they're so hard up for friends, you know. A lot of people pretend they like them, but millions of people hate them, you know.
Yeah, plus usually they hate everybody else, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're you know, it's a strange bunch, you know.
Right.
You got your conspirators, you got your working class. Most of the working class are just like working class Christians are. I mean, they go along with their leadership. So all these Jews that just go along with their leaders, like in the Zionists and like that, you know.
Right.
And they're not really into a conspiracy except obeying what the big boys tell them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they all got to toe the party line, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what it is. And Christians do the same thing, you know?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's apparently, you know, first God hated homos, and now apparently he loves them, so it's okay. God changed his mind, I guess.
All the time. Now they got people quitting the Mormon church in droves because they're pissed off that the church is ruling against the homosexuals. Thousands of those people are quitting the Mormon church.
Hmm. Why didn't you actually hear that?
Yeah, I just heard it the other day, and they had big meetings out in the park outside the churches, and they're signing people up, and they're writing into the head of the church and telling them, I quit and erase me from your roles.
Huh.
Over homosexuality deal.
That's odd. I don't see why actually people would really care that much about the homosexuals.
I don't care. I'm totally against all the Abrahamic religions.
Right.
I'm an atheist, and I became an atheist later in life. And so all that stuff just drives me up the wall.
Yeah, I really don't pay too much attention to it. So I try not to.
Yeah.
You know, it seems part of the problem with our movement is people are too hardlined. It's like, oh, this...
We don't have a movement. It's like Dennis Mahan used to say, it's a bowel movement. It's not really a movement. It's never got that far. We get a lot of people that say they believe a lot of the same thing, but they don't act it out. They don't do the work.
Right.
If I used to run different groups like that, and I gave up on membership stuff because you can't get people off their ass to do anything.
No.
So I decided I'll just do what I can do, and if other people want to do it too, fine, but I'm not going to be a leader anymore of these membership organizations because they're worthless. Only about 10% of the people in any organization do any work.
Right. Yeah, and then you got a couple other people, maybe they'll come around once in a while just to hang, basically just hang out.
Yeah. Well, they like their rallies, they like their music and all that stuff, but the trouble is the skinheads went so far down the rabbit hole on music and stuff that they quit doing what they should have been doing, and then also they went into, so many of them went into drugs that they became worthless.
Right. Yeah, like the Aryan Brotherhood.
Yeah. I get guys from prison writing me about that. I don't attack the Aryan Brotherhood because it's not my deal, but I'm not promoting them much either. Compared, though, to the Mongols and a lot of these other crappy race-mixed clubs, Aryan Brotherhood, at least, is still pretty white.
Yeah. But plus, it's more of a prison thing. It's a different culture altogether. You got to at least survive and get ahead in that type of culture. You can't really...
Well, the Aryan Brotherhood, they have a lot of educated people, and a lot of people don't realize a lot of highly paid people are riding the bikes now in Aryan Brotherhood and like that. So they're not all a bunch of bums.
Right.
But I don't want them mad at me, and so I've always been a supporter of the bikers. I don't support the criminality, but I sort of like them because they're sort of going back to the old times of guys on horses riding through town, you know?
Right, they're like outlaws.
Yeah. I'm an ideological outlaw. That's what I do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's basically the same line of thinking I'm on, too.
Yeah.
There's one thing that kind of always bothered me. Okay, you always speak out against the right wing.
Yeah, I have for several years. Yeah. Well, that's because they kicked me out. About 20 years ago, Dr. Fields with the Thunderbolt down there, he emailed me or called me or something because of a lot of my positions he didn't like. He said, "You're out of the right wing." I said, "You can't fire me. I quit." So that's the way that goes. I didn't get along with the leaders very well in the right wing. They pissed me off because they think more about money and just pretending to have a war and all that kind of stuff.
Right. You know, it's all about memberships.
Yeah, and they don't support the people who fall. People who go to prison, they drop them like a hot potato. They don't write them. They don't send them any money. They don't do anything.
No.
I mean, all of that Stormfront stuff, and they're not helping the prisoners or anything. And they say, "We got to have heroes that kick ass and all that." Well, then the guy kicks ass, and then they drop him like a hot potato.
Right. Like the Order. You know, I know a lot of people. At that time, it seemed like a lot of people. I wasn't around then, but it seemed at that time a lot of people were kind of speaking out against the Order or afraid to be associated with them.
Yeah, well, they felt they were a competition. I of course, I knew all the Order guys, and I was around all through that stuff, and I supported them all the way when all these right-wing leaders condemned them. And Bob Matthews was a great man, and I still revere him today, you know, and all those guys. I write all those. We've still got Order guys in prison. You know, it's 30 years now. One of them called me the other day. He was supposed to have a parole hearing after 30 fucking years, and there's still this nigger gal that reviewed his case, said, "We're going to keep you another 10. Richard Scutari.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's just cruelty and like that. That's not, he's not going to go out and try to do the same thing he did before at his age. He's 68 years old now.
Right. Yeah, what's he going to do now?
But most of those right-wingers, they said these are bad people. I remember this clown down in Arkansas, Tom Robb, said that Bob Matthews was just a common criminal and badmouthed him, and David Duke wouldn't support any of them, and almost all those leaders wouldn't support him. The only one who did was Bob Miles up in Michigan, and me, and Butler up in Idaho. We were the three that really supported those guys. So I think they were embarrassed about it, most of those leaders. And so they bad-mouthed me all the time. Well, come around here, I'll kick your ass. I'm 77, and I'm still pretty good shape.
Actually, yeah, now since we're talking about the order, there is one thing I wanted to bring up with you about that.
Sure.
Because it's been in the news recently. Fucking Traitor Glenn Miller. That piece of shit.
He's been a piece of shit ever since he's been around. The only time he did any good was when he started that Patriot Party down in North Carolina, I think it was. And he had a good group going there, and they were marching and all that, even though I knew that marching bullshit doesn't mean that much. But anyhow, I supported him when back then. But then he got hooked up with the order, and then he got in trouble, and he talked and turned people in and everything else. And then he went on a crazy ass spree of a new order, and him and a couple of guys took off and went across the country and got cornered and got arrested. And then he testified against his own buddies.
Right, his own crew. He turned them in.
Well, remember, he was married to a gook. He had a half-gook kid. I mean, you know, how did he ever get in the racial struggle at all?
Right.
I mean, you know. So, and also he said he was a Green Beret. He was a supply sergeant in the Green Beret. You know, that's like a guy that hands out uniforms.
He was a bat boy.
Yeah, I condemned him a long time ago, and I couldn't figure out why VNN kept him around, because he was an alcoholic. He's always been an alcoholic.
Right.
Married to a non-white. All kinds of crap, and then testifying against his friends and everything else. And I thought that VNN, what's his name? I forget his name, but anyhow.
Oh, Alex Linder.
I thought he was a pretty sharp guy. Why would he keep that guy around? And of course, it turned around now to really make him look like crap, that he goes out and shoots a couple of people, and not even Jews, thinking they're Jews. I mean,
right.
Just because he was drunk on his ass.
It's like, wouldn't you go to a synagogue instead of some community center? That would make a whole lot more sense to me.
I'd go to the Federal Reserve. Fuck the synagogue.
Yeah, fuck some low-level Jews.
Yeah, right. We want to go to the top. No, I was embarrassed by that guy, and I couldn't believe all the information we had on him, that they kept him around and actually got in my face because I exposed him, you know?
Right. Yeah, one of my shows I went into his entire background, I went into everything, and I got a lot of flack for it. Like, oh, how dare you talk bad about this guy that's been fighting for our people. It's like, he's a piece of shit. He's an informer. He's been an informer since the 80s.
Yeah, and why? Yeah, I just don't understand it. And as far as he did all this for the race, I'd like to know what the hell he did for the race. Everything he did was hurt the race, not help the race. And he surely helped hurt the movement or the struggle. By doing the things he did, I guess he ran for office a couple of times and maybe got a couple of dozen votes.
Right.
But, and I knew his, a guy who lived right down the road from him, a young guy, he used to report to me about what he was into. And, I forget all of it now, it's been so long ago, but, the one kid, got killed in a wreck or something, and was on dope or something. I don't remember now. But the whole family was screwed up.
Yeah, it wouldn't really surprise me.
I just told this kid down the road, just keep an eye on him. If you see anything strange, let me know.
Yeah. And it's always a good thing to do, is, you know, keep an eye on people sometimes.
Yeah. It's especially lunatics. Oh, we've had a lot of those kind of guys. It's not just him. That's why the right wing is so fucked.
Right.
I mean, and no matter how bad of a thing they do, they take them right back. You know, oh, well, he did some good back 10 years ago, you know.
Right.
That's the problem. You got to get rid of, you got to purge. If you're going to have a movement, you got to keep it purged. And that's what the order planned to do. several of these guys, or a few of them, are on the list, including David Duke. If the order would have went on very much farther and they'd have got what they wanted, there would have been no Duke around, I'll tell you that. He was on the list.
There's another guy I wanted to not bring up. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that piece of shit, too. David Duke. How do you ever get the name Plastic Man?
I gave it to him. Because he had plastic surgery about, I don't know, 15, maybe 20 years ago. He got you know, he was so vain. He was a good-looking guy. He didn't need plastic surgery any more than, you know. But he was so vain, and he was so always wanted to chase the women, but I think it's because he felt he wasn't up to it, really, because everywhere we went. See, I ran his first campaign when he ran for state senate down in Baton Rouge. Not the one when he got in, but this is way back in 76 or 7. Everywhere he went, I went. So I got to know him real well. And everybody went down there to work with him, got to know him real well, and most of them got disgusted and went home. He's an amoral man. You know what amoral man is?
Yeah, somebody doesn't actually have any morals.
Yeah, it's not immoral. He's amoral.
Right.
He's the kind of guy that can stick a knife in your gut, look you right in the eye, and say, what are you mad at? Anyhow, that's I don't talk about it too much anymore because he's got his followers. He goes through them all the time and gets enough money, and then he goes to Europe and skis. And the press love him. You know, the press love him.
Right. They can always throw out the former Klan leader thing. And
yeah, right. And well, he was a good spokesman. I mean, when I first met him, I was ready to follow him off a cliff because I felt this was the guy that was going to turn it around for us. But after I spent some time with him, I discovered what a person he was. And he's not a person I would want to follow.
Right.
Louis Beam said the same thing. We both quit Duke about the same time because, you know, you had to hide your daughters and your wives in a closet when he came around.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Well, the point was, he was sort of effeminate, and I think he chased a lot of women, but I don't think he really wanted to catch them. I don't know. I think he was trying to prove to himself he was a big heterosexual, you know. I don't know. I think he has effeminate qualities.
Yeah, I see that too.
Yeah. That book that he wrote, that last book, I think it was, he's sitting on a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look in there, see that picture, he's sitting up on that tree like a girl. And I've been on the front lines with him in California when the commies attacked us at Camp Pendleton Marine Base in California. We were about a half a dozen people, and we were attacked by about, probably 50 hardcore Reds. Some black gal came running through the crowd with just a placard, just, you know, cardboard, and took a swing at him, and he doubled up like he'd hit him with a baseball bat. I could see he was a physical coward.
Right. Yeah, he's always, he's pretty soft with his rhetoric, I guess, and I think, you know, he spends too much time trying to get a lot of money out of people. That's the one thing.
Hell yes, he hadn't worked a regular job in his life. I mean, I know he was paying a pornographer, a friend of his from Florida, about $1,500 a month to run his operation there in New Orleans, and nobody wanted to talk about that either. This guy was a I met the guy, got pictures of him. I know all about him. He was a heavy-duty porno operator.
What was he running?
Well, I get mixed up on the years. that would have to have been at least 15 years ago, maybe 20, that he was involved. And when it came out, he never got rid of the guy. So, anyhow, it's you can't. I don't talk about it much because they don't listen.
No,
the right wing don't listen. He's still a great white hero, and all that kind of stuff. He was in on that. Not Grenada, was it Grenada? That island they were going to take over down at
Dominica.
Dominica, I get them mixed up.
That Operation Red Dog or something.
So the conspiracy was between a kike Jew in Canada, a gambling guy, and a guy who had been in the army and got cashiered out because he was a homosexual. He was the leader. And then they were going into, all these guys were going into business with these Rastafarian niggers down on that island. What a, that'd make a good comedy movie. And they stupidly went down to shove off in a boat. They hired a guy to take them over there, and a guy was in part of the Coast Guard. These guys are so stupid, they couldn't pull off anything, you know.
I never understood what the deal was that. Why would they even do that?
Oh, they were going to build a new Nazi homeland down there on Dominica.
An island full of niggers.
Yeah, yeah, and they were going to, the niggers would have the concession on the marijuana, and Duke's guys would have the commission there for politics and raise a swastika flag. And let's see, who else? There was, oh, yeah, the guy's going to build a gambling casino down there. That would have blasted, that combination would have lasted about 2 months.
Well, of course, Duke wanted a gambling casino down there.
Well, yeah, but see, he kept clean on that. He never got prosecuted for that. And the reason he didn't, I think, is because there was a doctor from Tennessee, I believe it was, who was financing heavily this operation. And he got scared to commit suicide. So once he was out of the picture, I don't, they didn't have any way, evidently, of tying Duke to the operation, but his hands were all over it.
Yeah, I thought I heard he, like, backed out at the last minute or something.
Yeah, that's, yeah. He backed out of a lot of things.
Now, was Don Black involved with the Klan when you were in there, or was that?
Yeah, he was. You know, I really liked Don Black, but I told him back in 70, what was it? About 76 or 7, I met him at a restaurant down there in Baton Rouge. I said, Don, you got to get away from Duke. He's phony as hell. He's not the guy, and you got to know that by now. You've been working with him for a while. But he wouldn't leave him. He stuck with Duke. He still sticks with Duke, and sometimes yeah. I have suspicions about that thing, too. you know, he, Chloe Duke, who I knew very well, Duke's wife, I used to rock their kids on my knee, you know, when they were babies.
Right.
Duke's babies. And he divorced her, and then she married Don Black. That's sort of weird, if you ask me.
Yeah, I always thought that was kind of weird, too.
I mean, I guess it's, people might do it once in a while, but it's not something I would feel comfortable about.
No, I wouldn't feel comfortable with that at all.
No. Anyhow, he goes his way and I go mine.
Right. Yeah, I just tell people, just don't even bother with Duke. He's just a politician. He's just out to get money. That's basically what his deal is.
Believe me, if he ever got the power that we're talking about, he'd sell us all down the river.
Yeah, he would.
That's what he would do, because he wanted the power, and he tried everything he could to get the power, but he hadn't been able to get any power to speak of. But he's, the only thing he's gotten out of it is maybe a fair living. He rakes in enough money that he don't have to work. But anyhow, he's something I was going to say, and I can't remember what it was.
It's okay.
You don't say much about me because I know where all the skeletons are in the closet. I know where all... I'm the one of the last guys in this country that know where all the skeletons are.
Yeah, that's why it's always nice to talk to you about these things. You know so much about the history because you were there.
I was there. The right wing has always been full of homosexuals, too. A lot of the leadership are homosexuals or have been homosexuals.
Oh, they still are, some of them.
Yeah, like that crazy-ass Frank Collin, the head of the Nazi movement up in Chicago that was involved in that Skokie, getting that Skokie march going.
Right.
He was a pedophile. And Harold Covington, who I... boy, there's another one. He was right in there with him. And he couldn't tell the guy was a Jew. I could look at him 1 second and tell you he was a Jew. Cohen was his name.
Yeah.
Now he's scamming people with some kind of a, I don't know, historical magazine or something. He's off in the woods someplace, not doing anything racial.
Yeah, I read something about that guy probably about 6 months ago. Yeah, he was doing some historical thing. I don't even remember what it was.
I will say this. He was a good talker. I saw him on TV with sort of debating David Duke. And Duke's pretty good, but Colin beat him. Colin was a better speaker, of course. But anyhow, they talk about that Skokie, but they don't want to talk about, they say, the Jews were fighting this horrible thing, but they don't tell the, they don't say the guy that caused the problem was a Jew.
Right.
Frank Collin, the Jew, caused the problem.
Frank Cohen.
Is, Cohen, yeah.
Yeah, that was his actual name.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't bring up that the whole thing was a big farce from the get-go.
I knew the guy that came up with the idea. I talked to the guy one time. He was working for Colin Cohen, and he actually came up with the idea of marching in Skokie, and Cohen grabbed onto it and run with it.
Yeah, that would make sense, too.
I don't remember the guy's name anymore. I met him at one of the, I think one of the Bob Miles gets together up in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a, they had an FBI snitch working, Alan from St. Louis. He, all the time they had a snitch next to him. You know, it's sort of like that movie, The Blues Brothers, or those Nazis.
Yeah.
I hate Nazis. Remember that?
Yeah.
They ran them off the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have a sense of humor. I mean, even, you know, we got to face it. A lot of it's true. We've had more goofballs in this movement than you can shake a stick at.
That's what I always liked about you. You always had a sense of humor about everything.
You got to have a sense of humor. You'll blow your brains out.
Or you get these people that want to go up and start shooting.
Oh yeah.
Blacks or whatever.
Yeah, they're gonna turn the whole thing around by knocking off some poor dumb nigger down on the corner.
Right.
But I do love how they play into our hands, because what's going on now with this black, what is it? I forget what they call it.
Oh, the Black Lives Matter?
Black Lives Matter. I say White Lives Matter more.
Right.
But anyhow, I went through this back in the 60s. They did the same thing. They're doing the same thing. They're repeating the same thing over again.
Right.
And building this nationwide, and it's going to culminate in riots, and that's good. They're doing everything that I would want them to do right now. I can't believe how they're following my desires. I want them attacking the cops in the street. I want them screaming at the university. They're shutting the universities down. They're getting the professors fired, everything. This is great. I couldn't have designed a better program.
Oh, they had that thing.
The right wing, but the right wing, they'll sit around, oh, my God, look what they're doing. It's horrible. You know, bullshit. Worse is better.
Right. Oh, they had that thing. I think it was just Monday with the supposed white supremacists that shot all those Black Lives Matter people.
Yeah, I saw that. In fact, I talked about that on the show. What the hell was that all about? They go down to the thing, take, you know, video of themselves in the car and saying what they're going to do and everything, and then they shoot at people. These guys must have been on drugs or something.
You know what? I think that whole white supremacist thing is a bunch of bullshit. I think it was just a couple stupid-ass suburban white kids going, hey, let's go check out this protest thing. Let's see what's happening. Somebody was smart enough to take a gun with them, because if you're going to deal with a bunch of niggers, it's good to have protection and things get out of hand.
You're right. You're right. No, the term white supremacy doesn't even fit.
No.
I'm a white separatist. I've never run around yelling white supremacy, because nature will decide who's supreme. We won't decide who's supreme. Nature will decide that. And if we fail to cut the mustard, then we're going to fail, and we won't be supreme. And we're not acting. We're the shittest being supremacists now. I mean, all over Europe is nothing but, well, the only thing they got going is white reactionaries that are going all the way down to Eastern Europe there, to fart around and get killed and shoot Russians or something, while their own country, England and these France and those places, go to hell.
Right.
I can't believe it. And I keep telling these guys in Europe, get out of the goddamn right wing, start recruiting guys from the left and turn them into racists, because they're smarter than the guys in the right, and you'll get someplace. No, it's too easy just to put on a symbol and carry a flag and Sieg Heil and Hitler was wonderful and all that shit, which never has gone anywhere since World War II, and it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I think a lot of people put too much emphasis on, you know, oh, we're going to build the Fourth Reich or some crap like that.
Oh, horseshit. You know, Hitler would probably have executed most of these right-wingers. In fact, I'm sure of it. I've met so many screwed up right wingers, and they're, you know, big, fat, obese guys that can hardly walk. And Hitler wouldn't have put up with that stuff.
Right. Right. Like Harold Covington over there trying to start up this fat bastard.
Well, you see, we did that way back. I mean, he was a Johnny Come Lately. Robert Miles, Reverend Butler with Aryan Nations, and I started promoting the Northwest Imperative. That was way back. And I had I had a newspaper at the time. We talked it real good. We said, you know, if you're working class and you've got some way to get a job up in the Northwest, get up there, have a house out away from town, but meld into society. Don't go in there with flags and all that bullshit. Go in there as regular working class people. Get people to like you. Start little businesses and like that. But there's not enough people wanted to do it. Enough people would do it. And then he comes along 10 years later and revives that idea when we had forgot about it. We rejected it. Said, and by the time he got into it, hell, the Northwest was filling up with gooks from Canada and all over the place, and niggers coming up from L.A. and San Francisco.
Right.
So it was too late. Well, and that's as bad as this, what's his name now that's running around at, that's buying up property. He gave me a lot.
Oh, Craig Cobb.
Craig Cobb, he's doing the same kind of crazy thing. I told Craig, you get people to go into a small town, get a job, start a business or whatever you can do, or if you're retired, just live there and get to be friendly with the people. Join in their clubs and stuff, you know, be transparent, and that's the way you build it. You don't go into town like you're taking it over and scare the shit out of it.
Walk around with guns and swastika flags.
Well, he never listened to a damn thing I said. But I still have that lot up there. I don't know what I'm going to do. I was thinking of doing some kind of ecological billboard or something, you know, because they're destroying the state. These damn eco-terrorists, I'm talking about the corporations, they're ruining the state. And so the left is right about that stuff, you see. A lot of stuff the left is into, I agree, I'm anti-war, for saving the environment, because if white people don't have a good environment, and if they're always at war, how can they survive, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of people got to get rid of this whole left-right dichotomy bullcrap.
That's right.
They got to be white wing.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I say, I'll take from the left or I'll take from the right. But I'm not, in the last 10 years or maybe more, I've taken more from the left than the right. And I just have to get them over the line on the race issue.
Right.
On the other stuff. And if there's some homosexuals, I'm not looking under every bed like Hitler said when they went after Rome because he was a pedophile or panderist. That's what they called him.
Right.
And Hitler said, it's not my job to look under every bed. But then he used that situation against Rome then to kill him too, which was a crime because most of the brown shirts were not homosexuals, and there were high ranking people in the Nazi Party who were homosexuals. I mean, any group there is in the world, there's going to be homosexuals in them someplace.
Right.
Some of them are way in the closet. Some of them are more out. You know.
Yeah, I don't worry about it.
Well, I say, you know, when they ask me about somebody, is he homosexual? I say, I don't know. He never tried to play with my pee-pee.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you're going to say somebody's homosexual, there has to be evidence.
Right.
And I went to school, high school, with a young guy that he acted effeminate and everything else. He would swish around and flop his hands around, and you'd have thought he was a flaming homosexual. But he wasn't. So you can kill a guy like that and kill the wrong guy, you know?
Yeah, I've known people like that, too, that seem like they're, you know, big flamers, but they're actually not. That's just the way they are.
Yeah, so anyhow, well, the right wing shouldn't be so upset about homosexuals because it's been, had homosexuals in it for a long time, and I've got the names.
You know, as long as they're not out there, you know, promoting it, try to have a parade down the street, I don't give a shit what you do.
Well, what I don't like is guy hypocrites. So a guy that says, I hate homosexuals, I want to kill them all, but yet he's a homosexual. They got these preachers like that running around.
Right.
You know?
Those are the people who always scream the loudest about the homosexuals when they're really closeted homosexuals themselves.
I remember I went to a meeting one time with a friend of mine, and it was about perversion and stuff in the church, I think it was. Way back. This is way back before I even was very racial. And the speaker got up there and he went on and on and on, and he was breaking out in sweat and everything else talking about homosexuals. My friend leans over to me and he says, Tom, I said, what? He said, that fucker is a homosexual, but he's hiding it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He could tell this by the way when they go overboard about attacking somebody, you better watch out, because he's probably one himself. I'd rather have an honest one just come up and say, hi, I'm gay, how are you, you know?
Right.
They don't scare me. I'm a confirmed heterosexual. I don't feel threatened by a homosexual.
No, I don't. Like I said, I don't worry about it. It's like whatever.
I just don't like those crazy-ass ones, you know?
Right.
That they come into a place and they act like crazy goofballs, you know, and march in those parades and all that stuff. But there's a lot, most homosexuals are just calm, they got a job, and, you know, they keep it quiet and like that, you know.
Right. They act like black women.
Yeah, right, yeah. Who else can we attack?
there's something else I wanted to bring up. So last week? I think it was last week. Oh, that whole anonymous thing where they were putting out their list of Klan members. And
I was disappointed with Anonymous. I thought Anonymous was a pretty sharp bunch of hackers and like that. And a lot of stuff they did I liked. But when they came out and went after the Klan, I mean, that was really put them down as far as I'm concerned. Because What are they gaining about that? A little bit of publicity. The Klan is nothing anymore. I mean, it's absolutely nothing but putting papers around on people's lawns. I see they're at it again, putting massive amounts of Klan, join the Klan, and putting them around on people's lawns, just pissing everybody off. And I was in it back in the old days. We had pickup trucks full of stuff, the Klan stuff. We threw thousands of that shit out there. I don't think we ever got more than a half a dozen members out of it.
Right.
It's a waste of time. White people are going to have to suffer. They're going to have to get it. I'm not going to try to convince them anymore. If they want to ask me questions, I'll tell them. I'm not going to be like a preacher and grab them by the lapels. Screw them. They'll turn around and attack you.
Right. And they have the thing with that list, too. They had, what was that? That one black sheriff from Milwaukee was on the list and all kinds of people.
That was cool. I'll tell you why. I did the same thing years ago. I always, when I had a list, and I don't keep lists anymore, but when I did keep lists, I used to take all kinds of pillars of the community and put them in the list. Doctors, lawyers, teachers, they'd be salted inside, you know, the list.
Right.
So if anybody stole my list and went after these people, it'd be pandemonium, which is smart. Anonymous even attacked a senator here from Indiana and said he was a Klansman. Well, he could no more be a Klansman than the man in the moon. He's a crooked son of a bitch and Republican.
Right. Yeah, a lot of those guys are. Actually, they all are, but...
Yeah. No, but I just thought they demeaned themselves by feeling attacking the Klan is a good thing. You know, it's like giving them power they don't have. Like Bob Miles used to say, it's time to put the Klan to bed. It did a good job at one time, but it's over.
Yeah, the Klan hasn't been relevant in like 30 years. They haven't done anything.
Yeah, well, that's right. You know, when we were on, I was a Klan, we were out in the street battling it out with the Reds, and these were Progressive Labor Party. These are the people that were in Chicago back then. They attacked the police and threw acid in the face of the cops. These are the kind of people that I was dealing with back then. We had knocked down, drag out riots, man.
Right.
That was when the Klan was at least doing something. But these guys, since then, they grab them by their Klan robe and throw them around and wrap them up and kick your ass. I'm embarrassed by watching these Klan. I'm embarrassed when they get on camera, too. We're just in here because we love the Jesus Christ. We're standing for Christ. We're just a white boy that loved that flag, even though it was a part of the slave industry of the capitalists of the South that was fucking the white working class man just as much as he was the nigger, but we want that flag to wrap around us.
Plus, you know, you could be having the best conversation in the world. You could be handing out free beer. You could have the cure for cancer. You put on a white hood and a swastika flag behind you, and nobody's going to listen to a damn thing you got to say.
Well, I don't think I wore that Klan robe more than three or four times in the 5 or 6 years I was in it. I didn't like it. It looked shitty, as far as I'm concerned. at least the Nazis looked pretty good. I mean, you got to hand it to them, especially the all-black SS, man. That looked nice. But, of course, it wasn't going to fly here in the United States. I mean, you know.
No.
But it was sharp. And, you know, a lot of the countries around still put their military men in that stuff. Egypt, I remember when Egypt, they were goose-stepping down the street in black uniform just like the SS. I said, man, look at that. I didn't advocate people wearing that robe around, or not in public.
No.
When we took somebody way out in the woods to sign them up, way out there where it was dark and cold and all that stuff, we wear the Klan robes and have torches.
Right.
It looked cool. I mean, the guy'd take the blindfold off the guy and he goes, Jesus Christ, am I going to get out of here alive? You know.
Right.
That was sort of fun.
Yeah, that's, that's the appropriate time to do it when you're standing on the street corner. Just look like a big goof.
Well, they weren't. It all came from the riding coats that they used to wear in the old days, and they had a cape that you could pull up over your head. That's where that whole thing came from. It was something that was their regular apparel in the original Klan, which is the only one I really have any use for, is the original Klan. And they'd have that dust, like a duster, like the cowboys, some of them wore.
Yeah.
And they'd have that piece that went down over their shoulders, and then was rain and stuff, they'd pull it over their head. Well, that developed into the Klan so-called costume, you know.
Yeah, because they had, like, regular hoods on.
It was nothing like this Klan robe of the 20s and since then.
No, that was completely different.
They did. I mean, they had to disguise themselves, the real heavy-duty Klan. They even disguised their horses. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures where they had, like, the little masks over the faces of the horses and stuff.
Yeah. Well, even that was a little overdone, like Birth of a Nation.
Yeah, when they had the big unicorn horn on the horse.
Yeah. If you showed up in a southern town with one of these modern Klan robes on, they say, who in the hell are you? Where the hell you come from? You look like a goofball, man. I want you to join up with us. Your ass. I ain't joining up with you.
So you were pretty... I've always felt you've been kind of ahead of your time. Like,
well,
back...
I'd try to be.
You know, back when you were doing your border watch thing,
you were
trying to tell people about the illegal immigration problem, even, what was that, back in the early 80s?
77.
Yeah, late 70s?
75 to 80, I was heavy into that. I was had border watch going. We put cars together and put radios in them, and we put... made them heavy-duty cars so we could run them over the border area off the roads, and we could keep ahead of the Border Patrol cars trying to catch us and stuff like that. No, we went down there and really did it, you know, and I had to go to federal court because they tried to stop me from going to the border. And the federal judge says, well, hell, if you people, Mexicans, can travel the border, then he can travel the border too, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
How wide open were the borders?
Pretty wide open. To me, back then, it was an avalanche already. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a lot worse now than it was back then.
Well, now they got so many in here, they're going to have to get some to go back to make room, you know. But that's when also Duke showed his colors. I called Duke. I remember just like it was yesterday, and I said, Dave, you got to come out here. We got an issue that's a big, great issue. Everything can't always be niggers, you know? And so he said, what do you want? I said, I want you to come out and fly out here and go with me to the border. I'll set up a border tour with the Border Patrol, and I think we'll have something really to go with. And he didn't want to come. I said, I'm sending you the check. Get the ticket and get your ass out here. So he finally did come out there, and we made a big deal, and you know, it was international news and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
More publicity than he'd ever had, you know. Then I hired a helicopter to take us from North San Diego down to the border, and he didn't want to go in that. He said, "What do you want this helicopter for?" I said, don't you remember those pictures of Hitler flying around Germany, coming down out of the clouds? That's what we're going to do. So we got in that helicopter and traveled only about 10 miles to the border and came down and the dust was flying up. And we had about 25 reporters waiting on us and everything, and we crawled out of that thing. And Duke did a good job of talking, you know.
Right.
And so anyhow, that put us on the map, that thing, you know.
Yeah, and then a couple of years ago, you had, what's your opinion about JT Reddy when he was out there trying to do that?
You mean down along Texas border?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the things that we used to get away with back then and work pretty good, I don't think would work very well now because they're all over your ass for almost anything, you know? I don't think we should play games anymore. We're either going to do it or not do it. And these guys that are walking around the border with guns, and they're not going to shoot anybody. I mean, you know, only by accident they might shoot somebody and probably shoot themselves.
Well, actually, that was the other thing. When JT Reddy was out there doing it, then it comes out that he killed his whole family, then himself. You know, I don't actually buy that story.
Well, I don't know. I think I do remember something about that, but I have no way. I don't have any evidence one way or the other, so... I'm telling you, we've had a lot of wackos get into this thing, and I wouldn't doubt it that he did kill his family. But I don't know. I don't have evidence one way or the other.
Right. It just seemed pretty suspicious that he was doing this, and then all of a sudden, you know, him and his whole family ended up dead.
You know, I have a lot of problems with this militia crap, too. I mean, you know, I used to debate them on TV back in the 80s. I said, what do you do? Well, we're training out here in the woods, and we got an army in the woods, and we're ready to take them, and the government comes around. I said, you're out of your fucking mind. If the government wants to come out there in the woods, they'll send a couple of fighter jets out there and drop napalm on you, and that'll be the end of you.
Right, what are you going to do against a fighter jet or a tank?
Yeah, and they dress up in all this camos, and I've had a problem with those people ever since they started. Now, way back when Reverend Gale was running around, and I forget that other preacher, and then Butler and all those guys.
Right.
There was, and the Minutemen. There was some heavy shit going on. I wasn't right in it. I was just getting started to get into this kind of politics, the right wing. But hell, they had armaments buried all over that desert out there. And they're still digging them up. Every once in a while, a hiker will go along and kick up a grenade or a rocket launcher. The Minutemen, they had all kinds of ammunition and weapons hid off the coast. They had underwater caves under the coast there in California, and it took scuba gear to get in there, and they took all that weaponry and took it down below and into these caves. One time Robert DePue, the Minuteman, came out to California, flew in on a DC-3.
Mm-hmm.
They had guys out there with 100 guys with flashlights to give them the lights to where to land, and he landed there and all that. They used to have maneuvers in L.A. at night, mock maneuvers on police stations. I mean, they didn't actually attack the police station, but they pretended they were, you know.
Right.
They did all that kind of stuff, you know. I mean, that was back when there were some guys with balls in the right wing. Don't get me wrong. They haven't all been goofballs. Yeah, but anyhow, I don't know how the tons of that shit, they're buried all over the desert.
There's probably still some of it out there now.
Well, they were waiting on the Russians. It seems sort of silly today, but they really believed it. I knew guys that sold out their houses and everything else down by the coast and went up in the mountains there in California, and they were getting ready for the Russian invasion. And they're still up there. Well, they're probably all dead now, but it was something else. Well, they had big shots telling them that there's a guy called Peter Beater, which was a pretty funny joke. But that was his real name, Peter Beater. He was going around the country to all these right-wing groups telling them the Russians have atomic bombs sunk into the bays in New York Harbor, and they're all over the place. Shit like that, and the right wing ate that stuff up. And then they had the Chinese were training in Mexico, getting ready to invade, and Congressman Utt, who was my congressman down there, got caught up in that shit, and it was proven to be a bunch of baloney, and he lost his seat because of it, you know.
Right.
And then there was another bunch. They had the Russians were coming across the North Pole, and they were coming down through Canada to get us, and That's the kind of shit that the right wing kept coming up with because they had all these charlatans leading the right wing, moneymakers, you know. I remember going to a women's club meeting one time because I heard this super-duper anti-communist was going to be there, this lady, I forget her name. So I went there, and she's getting into a fever pitch about how horrible the communists are and all that, and I said, oh, yeah, she's okay. And then she said, and I know right now, and I know right down here on the coast in La Jolla where there's two Soviet agents right now living right down there. And all the women go, and I held up my hand and I said, two agents living in La Jolla? She said, yes. I said, well, we know where they live? She said, yeah. I said, well, let's get our guns and go down there and kill the bastards. And all those women flew out of there like a chicken coop, you know. They went crazy. You know, the right wing, if you got a solution, they want to go for it. Say, well, if you got two communist Soviet agents down in La Jolla, let's go kill them.
Right.
Yeah, which makes sense to me. Just like that one guy, that Otta guy that was in on the World Trade Center deal.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in San Diego, only about 20 miles from where I lived. And he lived in an apartment with an FBI agent informant living with him. And yet they couldn't figure out what he was up to?
Right.
That's that 9/11 is so much bullshit.
Yeah. We're not going to get into that right now. It was a bunch of crap.
Well, George Bush and Cheney are war criminals, and I hope to see the day when they're handcuffed and taken to The Hague and tried as war criminals. Yeah. Sons of bitches have gotten thousands of people murdered, destroyed countries all over, and yet they're walking around. Jeez.
Oh, speaking of it. So, here's a fucking piece of crap. I got some street cred recently because I got mentioned on somebody's talk show.
Yeah.
This past weekend. You ever hear a guy called his name Martin Lindstedt?
Yeah, I've heard him. He's sort of a whack job. He don't send anything to me anymore because I figured him out a long time ago.
I think everybody's figuring them out. I listened to this show for like a half an hour because somebody sent it to me. I'm like, oh, this guy was talking crap about you.
Yeah, well, that's join a crowd. I get that stuff every once in a while. Did you hear this? This guy said something about you. I said, I don't give a shit what he said. Who's he? What has he ever done? Some nobody, you know?
I was in that show for about half an hour. He couldn't understand half of what he was saying, but
and whenever those guys can walk the walk I've walked in my life and done the things and suffered the way I've suffered, then they got something to talk about. But I mean, I've been into the heat of it and I've taken it, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, like that whole Portland thing where they basically tried to destroy your life.
Oh yeah, they did. Yeah, yeah. But they found out I was more stubborn than they thought. Morris Dees couldn't break me. He got some money from me and like that, but he could never break me. And he never talks about me hardly at all, except the one time he said, Tom Metzger is the most dangerous man in America. And I said, gee, that's the nicest thing anybody ever said about me. I've been in and out of courts all over.
Right. There's a rumor I was kind of debating bringing this up or not, but
bring whatever you want up.
So there's that rumor going around that the SPLC controls your P.O. box down there.
Oh, shit. That way back a little bit, but that, you see, those judgments only last 20 years. And that's way back. I mean, you know, and then they can only extend them 10 years. And I had many ways of avoiding them getting money. I'm never going to tell them the secrets. I can tell them this. I sent my daughter to a fine university in Washington State on the public dole because I said, you want to the people want to take my money and steal what I've got. Well, screw you. I put my whole family on welfare, by God, and we said, you take from me and I'll take from you.
Right.
And I got free medical and all that kind of stuff. So for whatever D's got from me, I got as much from the public. Oh, there's still guys using that thing that I'm a bad guy because D's was taking all my money. First place, I didn't have hardly any money. I never made over 25 grand a year, and all through that time, my wife stayed home. She was a stay-at-home mother. I had six kids, and so I didn't have any money. They lied like hell at the trial. Said I was taking in 200 some thousand a year. Shit, I would have loved to have taken in 200,000 a year, but they can twist things around in court to where you don't know what the hell's going on. You know,
right.
They get some guy, some expert comes down from a bank or something and testifies and lies through his teeth. And what are you going to do? They don't believe you. So you just have to take it and say, I'm not going to quit. I don't care what you do, I'm not going to quit. I never quit. And I published a newspaper the same month that they got that judgment against me. And so what was it, 6 or 8 million? That was a big joke.
Right.
People used to ask me, what did you do? I said, well, I wrote them a check. What do you think? No, all these right-wingers will use shit like that they don't know anything about. They don't know what went on during that period of time. They don't know what I was doing to counteract it and the methods I used, because the methods I used were too much for them. They couldn't figure it out anyhow.
I've heard those same fucking lines from people for like the past 20 years. And it always gets on my nerves. And, I heard the story, or not the story, but the truth of the matter, and you try to set people straight and they don't fucking listen.
Well, even the extension of 10 years on the judgment was over 20 years ago, for Christ's sake. How long are they going to, even if it all was true, when are they going to leave it alone? It's over. It's been over for a long time.
Right.
And I did all right. I remember I got a $20,000 operation on my eye, sent my kids to college, got free medical all that time and everything. So I became judgment proof. I said, well, hell, if this is what it's like to get a judgment against you, then give me another one, you know? Shit.
And all that time, Morris Dees is taking all your money.
Yeah, Morris Dees, that's funny. He thought he was hurting me, but he didn't. I mean, it was, I will say it was anguished because I couldn't get an attorney. And then the other bullshit they put out is that I was such a braggadocious guy that I defended myself in the court. That's horse shit. I couldn't get an attorney to take my case, and I didn't have the money to pay him anyhow.
Right.
I mean, everyone I talked to, the attorney, wanted $100,000. I mean, maybe I had $1,000 in the bank like that,
Right.
So these dumbass right-wingers say, oh, well, he just did that because he was trying to make a big deal. I would have rather ate glass than to represent myself in that court. It was horrible. We were all living, two or three of my guys in law books. We were staying in a motel up there reading them. The laws at night, trying to come up with better defenses and the whole bit. So we just decided, bullshit. This is what I am when I got on the stand. This is my newspaper. This is what I say in my newspaper. And pretty much, if you don't like it, kiss my ass. I knew we were going to get it. I knew they were going to get us, So John and I, we just sort of, when they came in with the verdict, we were sitting in another room with some Portland cops standing around, and we started laughing, and the cop says, what are you laughing for? You just lost your ass. I said, we knew we were going to lose our ass when we came up here. It's no big news to us. So
right.
We'll survive.
back then, weren't you doing a lot with like the white power music and skinheads and stuff like that?
Well, yeah. Well, see, I got in contact. I got in league with the skinheads because I supported the National Front political party in England, and they were pretty big stuff at the time, and they were using skinheads as their bodyguards. And so I sent a guy over there, or he went over there, and he was going to videotape all this stuff, their marches and stuff. And he got to telling them about me, and then I got in touch, started talking to them, and then they transmitted to the early skinheads over here that I was available, I was around, and so it all sort of came together. And so then they, it's not really true, but they said I'm the godfather of the skinheads. Well, there's a lot of skinheads I would march into any battle with, but there's a lot of skinheads I would push off a cliff, too, because they do more harm than they do good. So, I mean, I never made a dime off that music. Willis Carto and those guys, they made all the money. And then
Pierce.
And Pierce made a lot of money off of it, you know.
Yeah.
I never got it. I mean, I had a few things, but nothing big. So I never got the fat out of that deal at all.
To
be perfectly honest, I'm not a real fan of hardcore skinhead music. You know, if you're out at a rally and you're drinking and you're having fun and slam dancing and all that,
yeah,
it's cool. But to sit in my library and play that stuff, I don't... It's not, I'd rather listen to Frank Sinatra.
Right. Did you ever meet Ian Stewart?
No, I didn't. But he dedicated one of his albums to me. I know that, me and John and I. Because I couldn't get into England. The one time I said I wanted to see, test the water, see if I get into England, I put out the word I'm going to England. And the guy sent me a clipping from the English, British papers. And it said that the rumor, Tom Metzger, this horrible white supremacist, is coming to England, and we've got every port in the country covered. So I didn't go. They wouldn't let me in. They wouldn't let me in. And then I got kicked out of Canada for making a speech, really. I didn't do anything wrong. I gave a speech to, and John did too, to about 500 people. And... then we're going to leave the place and go to another guy's house and have a few beers. And we're in this line of traffic, and the traffic stopped. And I said, I wonder what's going on up ahead. And the cops were up there going up to each car. And, somebody must have robbed a bank. And all of a sudden, they come to our car, and Mounties dressed in black uniforms and black masks with submachine guns threw me and John and I out on the street in our suits laying flat on our face and took us and held us for about 5 or 6 days, I guess it was, and they had a hearing and said, we're going to deport you and never come back to Canada again. If you treat me like this, I don't want to come back to Canada. For Christ's sake, I didn't do anything.
Right.
If you're going to get me for giving a speech, get me before I give the speech, because I did the damage. 500 people heard the speech.
Right.
Crazy. It's crazy, these people, how they overreact, you know.
Yeah, they got some pretty strict hate code speech laws up there in Canada. And a lot of European countries, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'd be in prison in 5 minutes if I said over in any of those European countries what I say here.
That's why it kind of makes me mad when people in the United States is like, oh, we can't say this, we can't say that. Bullshit. We got more freedom to say any goddamn thing you want than any place else in the world.
Absolutely. You just have to have balls. I mean, you know, free speech is not cheap. A lot of times you have to pay, you know.
But, right.
That's another reason the right wing have a problem with me, because I've always had the balls to do whatever I wanted to do and say what I wanted to say. And they're almost offended by that, you know, because they don't have the balls to say it. I'm trying to think of one real racial leader in the right wing who's got balls and really does something. None of those Stormfront people and VNN that I know of. God, I feel like the lonely Linwood Ford dealer out here. I mean, you know, all by myself, you know.
Right. Or else if they do something, then it's just a little conference.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, come to our conference. Buy tickets and fly clear across the country. $500-$600 to get here, and then your hotel and your meals and everything, and then donate a whole bunch of money to our deal, and we're going to tell you exactly what you've known for 20 years. I mean, they just tell them the same old shit over and over again. They change a little bit, you know, like, you know, different country we're bombing or something like that, you know.
Right.
And then those meetings are full of ADL agents and FBI agents and CIA agents. There's more federal agents in there than there are people, just regular people.
Right.
But they don't want to listen to me. I know a lot of people that I really like that still go to that shit. And you, with the internet, you don't have to go anywhere. You can find out anything you want to find out and more.
Right.
But they like to keep it like the old days where, well, I'm David Duke, and I'm going to tell you exactly what's going on and exactly what we ought to do about it, but don't ask me to do it.
Well, why would I sit there and listen to David Duke? I can sit here and watch YouTube videos all day.
Hell yes, you'd learn a hell of a lot more. Yeah. Or go up to Metzger's house. He's got 1,000 books up there.
That's right.
Yeah, it's been fun. I wouldn't change it for anything. I've evolved over the years, starting out as just a little conservative Republican guy and gradually getting more radical year by year. And I was in the John Birch Society for 10 years and all that. And I kept evolving, learning new things and changing. And I'm almost at the point of, if I learn any more, I'll be in prison.
I actually know what you're saying.
You've got to have a sense of humor, or you'll go off the deep end, and like some of these guys do, like that Glenn Miller. I mean, you know, he was really off the deep end.
You know, I think the thing with Glenn Miller, besides being a whack job to begin with and a informer, I think part of the reason that happened is because, what did he have, emphysema or something like that?
Well, hell yes, he was a chain smoker.
Yeah, so he had pretty big health problems. Now, it doesn't matter, he goes to prison, he's got free health care, he's got free room and board, he's got everything, he doesn't have to worry about a damn thing. Even if they give him the death penalty, it still it still won't be for another 20 years, he'll be dead by then anyways.
Believe me, they're going to ice him faster than that, because he's a lot supremacist. But it's too bad, because when he started out, and I didn't know him or anything, but he was doing some great stuff. I mean, he had hundreds of those guys in uniform and with the rebel flags and all that, and then marching down the street. It really gave a boost to the right wing, I'll say that, even though I knew in my heart it wasn't going to go anywhere, but I thought he was really trying.
Bam.
So gradually he got off the deep end.
Yeah, I heard part of his problem was because he was drinking too much and just did stupid crap.
You got to watch that booze. I like to have a drink now and then, but, boy, I always watch it. And you can't, if you're in a sensitive position, you got to be watching your back all the time, you know.
Right.
Hanging out in bars is suicide. My gal and I go out and we have dinner, we have a few drinks. Usually I max about 2 drinks, and I sing karaoke. I love to sing and like that. But these seedy little bars around, you can get in a lot of trouble quick, you know.
Right, right. You know, yeah, I remember just out of the blue, me and my girl were at a bar one day, and this guy just wanted to fucking fight me for, like, no reason. Not anything I said, he just wanted to kick my ass.
There's guys like that. They're professional troublemakers. There's one sort of a seedy bar in this town. The rest of them are pretty nice. And actually, the lodges, they got the Moose and the American Legion like that. Pretty much middle-aged or older people. and you never see a fight in there. But this one bar, they get some pretty wild music in there. And my gal and I used to go in once in a while. Went in there one night, and some gal didn't like my politics and really got in my face, and a couple of guys were coming at me. And luckily, I had two guys in there watching me, and they ran out in the street, and they're having a fight in the middle of the street, the whole bit. And then the stupid guy that owned the bar said, "You can't come in here anymore." I didn't do anything. The assholes attacked me. I mean, you know.
Right.
So I don't go in there because it's a lot of the seedy kind go in there, and they make good Klan members. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I have total high regard for the old Klan and the guerrilla warfare and all that kind of stuff. I have 100% respect for that, but I don't have respect for this Hollywood Klan shit.
Right. No. Kosher Nazis.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. And the Hitler lovers that go too far. I mean, you know, I can think of things that I respect Hitler for, and I have a lot of things I don't respect him for. But don't expect me to be a Hitler worshiper. Some of these guys, that you say anything about Hitler negative, and they just go crazy.
Right.
I had a guy just the other day I've known for 25 years at least. He write me a note, and he said, "I still don't agree with you about saying Hitler was Jewish." And I said, wrote him a letter back. "When the hell did I say it was Jewish? I said that there are different books on the subject. Some claim he was part Jewish. Some claim he wasn't. I'm over that. I don't give a shit anymore. I say if this makes you feel better, if Hitler was a Jew, he was the greatest Jew that ever lived." That usually shuts them up. They don't know what to say to that. As far as the Holocaust, mostly bullshit. I have my theories.
Right.
I don't think we have enough time, but my theories is that the B'nai B'rith and the Zionists were pissed off at the Jews in Germany because they were becoming assimilated, you know.
Right.
You know, like thousands of them fought on the side of Hitler, you know. But I think world Jewry, they not only wanted to get them over to Israel, but they wanted to punish these German Jews because they were more German than they were Jew. And I think the whole thing came about like that. The whole thing was totally mismanaged and handled wrong. Maybe have a Jew back in his family 5 generations, and you just say, "Look, you're going to swear your loyalty to the Reich?" "Sure, I will. You know, I didn't even know I was part Jew." And, okay, you're okay. You don't put everybody in a goddamn cattle car. No, I'm very suspicious of that whole thing.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of questions about that whole situation, especially the whole time in history.
Yes.
And the only thing I like you brought up the idea of Hitler was a Jew. The other thing I like to bring up is people talk about how he was funded by the Bushes and the Rothschilds and all this shit.
Well, of course, you took money from where you could get it.
That's what I always said.
And to get power, those guys would invest their money wherever they can make a profit. They didn't give a shit whether he was a Nazi or a fascist or a communist even. Those are the kind of guys, those capitalists, they'll go anywhere to make money. And so, sure they did. They gave him a lot of money.
Right.
Back when I was running for Congress in 1980 and as a blatant racist, if somebody had come up to me and said, "I'm going to give you $10,000 cash for your campaign," I'd have said, "Hell yes, give it to me. I don't give a shit who you are. But I'm not going to follow your dictates. I'm going to do with it what I want to do with it."
Right. That's what I was exactly going to say. If George Soros comes up and he wants to give me $1 million, I'll take it, but I'm not going to do what you tell me to do.
Hell yes. I've known some of those big politicians. And, Pat Brown was the governor of California, and he was a pretty good governor, too. I knew him. I've had martinis with him, and he told me once I went to a cocktail party when I was running for Congress, and he showed up, and he was sort of the grand old man of the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. And he comes down to, I'm at the one end of the pool, and all the others that don't like me are at the other end of the pool. Anyhow, he comes down, puts his arm around my shoulders, and said, Tom, you could have one hell of a future in politics if you just get away from this Klan stuff. And I said, well, I appreciate your advice, Pat. But I didn't get away from this Klan stuff for a while.
Right.
In fact, I think I got more radical as a racist after getting out of the Klan, to be perfectly honest about it. I got out in '80, and I've been getting more radical ever since.
You know, I keep getting more and more radical myself, and sometimes I got to watch what I say sometimes.
Yeah, there's a time to be quiet. And in fact, that's what I promote, lone wolf activity. Fly under the radar, even if you have to pretend sometimes you're on the other side, you know.
Right.
I want my friends to be in all the areas of government. I want them to be cops. I want them to be FBI agents. I want them to be college professors. That's what I told the skinheads 25 years ago. I said, get rid of the skinhead thing. Let your hair grow out. Go to college. Become professionals and dig in. Because we'll need you, son. Someday we'll need you. And don't tell anybody what you believe or anything like that. Just keep quiet. We got a lot of them out there. I don't know how many, but they've been digging in for years. And you'll never know. I mean, an FBI agent might come to your door, two of them, and one of them is one of our people. But they're going to pretend to be the worst sons of bitches in the world, because that's what I've taught them. You have to. If you're going to outsmart the enemy, you got to outsmart him, and you got to out-Jew the Jew.
Right.
Because a lot of things, Jews are very clever, and a lot of things they pull off are very good tactics. And instead of saying, "Well, I wouldn't want to do that because that was a Jew." It'd be like being in a war and you lose your rifle and you look down and there's an AK-47, like back in the old days, a Soviet AK-47. Oh, I'm not going to pick up that AK-47 because those Jews and those Soviets made that rifle. I'm only going to use a Remington, you know.
Right. Sometimes the thought patterns of some of these people are kind of beyond comprehension sometimes.
I call my method the jiu-jitsu method. Use the enemy's weight against him.
Right.
Jiu-jitsu is about. But I don't concentrate on the Jews because I get all the news from Israel. All this bullshit about them being so secretive, they're about as secretive as a Hollywood reporter. I mean, if you go on the internet and follow the Israeli newspapers and all that, they tell about everything. I mean, they tell some bad shit on themselves, you know, because the Jews fight among themselves all the time. So
right.
the myth that the Jews are so secret is a myth, as long as you know how they operate. You can read between the lines on the news and tell exactly what they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, I do that all the time. You go to the Times of Israel, the Jerusalem Post, they always got crap that they're doing on there.
Yeah, and I love it how they get to attacking each other because there's no love lost between, you know, having been over there to Israel, the tour guide told me, he said, you know, this country's going to come apart. And he said, the reason it's going to come apart is these Orthodox Jews get everything free. They get welfare free. They get, they don't have to fight in it. They don't have to become military. They get education free. They get all this stuff. And the average Israeli is getting taxed to death to support these damn Orthodox Jews. He said, the guy, Orthodox Jew, lives across me in my apartment building. He says, he gets everything free. And he's got six or seven kids, too. And I have to pay through the nose. They're very unhappy with these people. No, Israel, I've said maximum 20 years. You don't have to go to war against them. Just put a wall around it and let them fight it out.
And right.
The Jews kill Jews all the time.
Yeah, the Jews, they're getting pretty... It seems like they're more and more ramping up their...
Well, you just don't attack the Jews. Let the Jews will put themselves out of business. Like I said, if you put a wall around Israel and told all the Arabs to knock it off, don't attack them, within 10 years they'd kill each other. I mean, there's so much hatred among the Jews of each other that they can't handle peace. The only way they survive is persecution. It drives them together and causes them to work with people they hate. You know,
right.
That Jew over there, I hate his guts, but he's not quite as bad as that Arab, you know.
Right. They've been doing that for hundreds of years. It's in their blood.
Yeah, and a Jew, most Jews will admit it to you, too. No, there's no big secret.
No. Who do you think is a bigger enemy? Well, who do you think is our, like, number one enemy?
Us.
Us?
Yeah, the white race. We're screwing ourselves. We don't need any big bad enemies, the niggers or whoever, Mexicans. We're doing it to ourselves. Nobody could do it to us. Nobody could ever have done it to us. We've done it to ourselves. Fratricidal wars, World War I, World War II, the Civil War, Korea, Vietnam, religion. We're doing it to ourselves. If we disappear from the planet, we've got nobody to blame but ourselves.
Right. Yeah, I would actually agree.
I mean, I'd rather do away with half of the white race in this country. I mean, you know, they're worthless. They're the enemy. They'll knife you in the back. They'll rat on you. They'll do all that stuff. That's something that the Klan and people like that don't understand. Oh, it's a lot worse. Whoa, for the white race. But every time you try to have a meeting, all these other white people come in and beat your brains out, you know.
Right. Yeah, the people who are always protesting all these things are other white people.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been in enough riots to know that. I mean, I remember one in Oceanside, California, where I went in there with 30, 35 guys in uniform and the whole bit. And we were attacked by about 200 people. And most of them had been drinking all day. But anyhow, it was the white cops who attacked us, and there was whites and Mexicans. At the beginning, before the riot started, there were a couple of blacks up front. They were doing their jive thing, you know, we're going to get you and all that bullshit. And the minute the riot went down, they were gone. So there were no blacks at all in the riot.
Right.
It was just white cops and white civilians and Mexicans like that who attacked us.
That's the thing, too. Blacks, they're not going to mess with a strong white man.
No, they're not. They weren't going to do anything. They like to jump around and jive talk. And you walk down the street, and if you see a group of nigger guys coming towards you, just look them in the eye. Don't look like you want to hurt them or do anything nasty. Just look them straight in the eye. They'll never bother you.
Right.
Well, you know, there's always one or two that might.
Yeah, they might say something to you, but if you don't back down, if you stand your ground, they will back down.
Well, I look them straight in the eye, and the thing that really gets them is when you smile at them. Then they know you're not a faggot. Yeah, you always should do that. You see a problem coming, look them straight in the eye.
Right.
And you notice how many people in society always look down and away when you look them in the eye?
Right.
I see all these women at the department store, a lot of good-looking women and stuff, and I always look them in the eye or try to look them in the eye. It's just something I do. And they'll always look away. I guess it's because I got bad breath or something, but they look away. Men are cowardly. White men are cowardly, most of them.
Right.
And you look them in the eye, and they'll look away and look down at the ground and all that stuff, you know, cowardice. And our race, nature's going to take care of our race, though, because we've got no other choice. We'll have to re-evolve, and we got to get our ass totally whipped, and not only by other races, but by nature itself, to where we're up against the wall like we've been up against the wall many times before. I mean, when the Mongol hordes come into Europe and all that stuff, and the Moors come into Europe and conquered whole Europe and all that, we got up on our ass and finally got our act together and kicked their ass. And we can't do anything the way it is now. We've got to get our collective ass totally kicked before you'll get enough white people to really stand up and do what they should do.
What do you think is, like, the best plan of action for, like, the people of Europe to do now, since they got this big invasion coming in?
I think it's great, because the Euro government's going to collapse, and it's going to go back to nationhood. And when it goes back to nationhood, they'll all start acting like Bulgaria, which they say, fuck you, you stay out of here, we'll shoot you. This whole Euro government thing weakened the white Europeans. When they think nationally, they rise to the occasion and seal the borders and kick ass. But you see, here's another thing, we're our worst enemy. That all comes from our military-industrial complex and these goddamn politicians getting us involved in every damn country around the world and telling people they got to do what we say and regime change. You know, who are we to tell we want regime change, you know?
Right.
Stopping all those guys? Well, they were a hell of a lot more desirable than what these guys want to replace it with. So all of this shit that's driving these people out of the Middle East into Europe, we've bombed the shit out of all their houses.
Right.
By the thousands, we're bombing them now. We're bombing over there in Syria. Well, those ISIS guys are in the neighborhoods of all the rest of the people. So you can't bomb ISIS without killing a tremendous amount of regular people.
Right.
So they got nothing left. Their house has been totally destroyed, like the Palestinians. So they say, fuck, we got to get out of here, you know. So I understand that, and it's here again. We caused it.
Right.
Our Republican war hawk people and the military-industrial complex caused all this. And it all started, really, with George Bush, Jr., and Cheney. Those two sons of bitches are the most evil guys I've ever seen. They're responsible for hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people being dead that didn't have to die. So again, it comes back to our own doorstep. We've done it to ourselves. And then they're standing around wondering, well, why are these thousands of people trying to get in there? Well, they're trying to feed a goddamn bombing. You know, you're over there bombing the shit out of them and killing them, droning them and everything, and they don't have any other choice but to flee.
Right.
You know, so it's a problem situation, and it's not going to stop until the United States military-industrial complex comes home. Bring all the troops home. Get out of there. It's not our country. It's not our area of the world. Let those people figure out their own problems.
Yeah, there's no reason we should even be over there in the first damn place.
Of course not. Just like we shouldn't have been many times in the past 100 years.
Right.
You know, we shouldn't have been in Korea. We shouldn't have been in Vietnam. Before that, we shouldn't have been in the Philippines. It's all about money. It's all about money. Follow the money.
Yeah, it's always been about money.
Yeah. So, and we don't have any real anti-war movement going in this country. You know, I wish it would start up again like it did in Vietnam. I'd be out there marching. I don't give a shit if a guy's a communist. I'd be marching beside him because I'm against the war.
Right. What do you think, like, nowadays, it seems like a lot of our communications are being monitored. Is there, like, a good way? Like, what's the best form of communication to use nowadays?
One-on-one in a closet. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you. I never meet but one-on-one in a public place, you know, where there's lots of noise, like a bowling alley.
Right.
No, there is no secure form of communications, no extremely secure form. All that shit, I went through that with all this stuff you can buy to encrypt your computers and all that stuff. It's all bullshit.
Man, it's all bullshit. That, all that stuff was made by the FBI anyways.
I knew guys that were in the heart of that, designing that equipment. They said, there's nothing that can't be broken. There's nothing. And even back when it was telephones, I said, never talk on the telephone unless about anything that might be considered illegal or anything like that.
Right.
You just don't do it, you know. We might have to revert to carrier pigeons. I don't know.
Actually, that's funny because the guy who asked that in the chat room mentioned that you would mention carrier pigeons.
Yeah, well, it works. I mean, the North and the South in the Civil War used carrier pigeons. In the First World War, they used carrier pigeons. And they even have a Congressional Medal of Honor to this one pigeon that did such good work in the First World War. It works. And they're hard to hit, too, if somebody tries to shoot them.
Right.
But the best way is just not talk at all. If you know what needs to be done, you're an individual, and you can study how to do it. You just do it. You don't get anybody else involved with it at all.
Yeah, that's probably the best way. You know, I think a lot of people put too much emphasis on having other people help them or having groups or things like that.
But the one thing you got to understand is you don't, there's nothing of high importance that we can do right now. There's just nothing. I mean, they got all the bases covered. They got infiltration everywhere. And who are you going to do? You say, well, let's shoot somebody. Well, who are you going to shoot? Well, that son of a bitch. Well, there's 1,000 son of a bitches like him around. Are you going to shoot them all? I mean, come on. You assassinate, you know. There was a time when if you knocked off one guy, you might have solved something, but not anymore. The world is so corrupt that, you know, in fact, let me, maybe I can play this thing for you here. See if you can hear this.
That was pretty good.
All you have to do is step out of its way. This goddamn thing's coming down. It may not even be in my lifetime. It's coming down. This empire is coming down. And the white people that don't get out of the way and learn how to survive and kill and be ruthless are going to die with it.
I actually would actually agree with that wholeheartedly.
By looking around the white race right now, you know it's not going to happen for a while.
No. But if it did, let's say it happens tomorrow. You know, all these weak-ass people would, we got to cull the herd, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it actually might be a good thing if it happens sooner than later.
Well, I'm all for it happening sooner, you know. But I'm saying you don't have to do a hell of a lot because it's going to be done whether you agree with it or not.
Right.
And we'll get this evolution back on track, get the white man back on track. But he's going to have to get his ass kicked really hard. Millions of white people are still going to die until we get the balls to bring it back. That's my opinion.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with you. I wouldn't argue with that at all.
It might not even happen. Maybe we're all through. I mean, I can't say. I hope not. But World War II was a message, fratricidal war, killing each other off. I mean, we'd always rather fight than switch. I mean, you know, white people want to kill each other before they kill anybody else.
Right.
And then when they kill anybody else, they kill the wrong people, you know. So I don't know. You can talk about white superiority all they want, but I begin to wonder. Well, I think we've about done it, haven't we?
Yeah, there's two more things I wanted to bring up.
Oh, okay.
So on one of your recent shows, you were talking about you needed help uploading your Race and Reason shows onto the Internet.
Yeah, onto YouTube.
Yeah, on YouTube.
They banned me.
I could do it for you if you want. It's no big deal.
Probably not, because a lot of things are not a big deal that I don't get time to do or I don't have somebody helping me. I'll tell you what, I'll tell my webmaster, and if we can dig out more that are not up there. The thing is, I don't know how many. I mean, I've got thousands of hours of stuff.
Right.
That I don't think hardly very much is up there. I mean, there's quite a bit up there, but, you know, the Wally George show stuff. All those TV shows I did back in the 80s and the 90s, they still, I'm happy we still got them, because I had a lot of fun doing those shows.
Right, yeah, I've seen a couple of those, and those are pretty good shows.
And then all the Race and Reason shows that I did in the studio, I'm proud of that, because I got to interview a hell of a lot of the leaders at the time, you know.
Yeah.
And before they died, and I never thought that it would come to that, but they're all, most of them are gone. I mean, you know, but at least we got them on tape, you know, like Bob Miles and a hell of a whole bunch of them, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you need help, you know, you got my email, just let me know.
Okay, I'll do it.
The last thing I wanted to bring up is, do you have any suggestions or advice for what we're trying to do here, start up a new radio network? Or?
Oh, I don't know. Just do it. Most of them, when they get other guys in with them, they always fall apart fighting, you know. I think it's best to do it by yourself. I mean, because there's been dozens and dozens of shows get started, and then usually there's two or three guys involved, and they end up fighting each other and going different ways, you know.
Right.
You don't need a bunch of people to put on a radio show.
No.
Yeah, and just get to where people want to get your show and like that, promote it some way, I don't know.
Right.
That's a little difficult, I think, for a brand new person to get a following, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because now there's a whole lot of guys are doing it, but I don't have time to go around and listen to all their shows, you know. And I've had a couple of co-hosts, but always something went wrong, you know.
Yeah, whatever happened to Ghost Wolf?
I don't know what happened to Ghost Wolf. He just disappeared. But the thing that pissed me off about that was that I'd loaned him a bunch of books, which I swore I'd never do, loan books. And he got flooded out, I guess, over there. And I said, well, you know, put them in a box and send them back, no matter what they're like. And,
right.
But he never sent them back and quit talking to me or calling me. And I don't know what the hell happened to him. Well, yeah, it's not good to leave people without knowing what's going on. He could be dead for all I know.
Right. Yeah, I know people were asking me about that, too. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't even think Tommy knew who he was or...
Not really. I mean, I knew something about him, but I don't pry into people's private lives very much. If I have to know that, I just go down to the City Hall and Justice Building and pull the files, civil and criminal, and read them over. If there's none in there, well, I'll consider they're either clean or they're agents of the government, and they keep the file clean.
Right.
You can't tell. I mean, you know, I've gone in to pull files on people, and there was nothing bad in there, but they turned out to be bad because, as agents, they keep the bad stuff out of the file while they're infiltrating you, you know. So,
right.
You got to learn, if you're going to work with somebody physically, you just do have to do the gumshoe work, follow them around, see where they work, see who they are and all that stuff, you know. But the way I do things, it don't make any difference. because I don't let people get that close. I had a couple of guys help me put the TV show in here about 2 or 3 years ago. Hell, they turned out to be ATF guys, you know. So I quit doing the show, and I just do it myself here in the bunker.
Oh, you meant like the Pod Blank one with the live video one?
Yeah, my TV show, yeah. Race and Reason, yeah. I was doing it over here in Fort Wayne. A couple of guys said they'd like to help me, and I said, well, that's fine. So they ran the cameras, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they turned out to be ATF. They were looking. They were trying to trap me into something. I don't know. And that's about the time they raided my house.
Right.
They went over this house with a fine-tooth comb, and they didn't find anything. Of course, I could have told them that. They won't find anything. Even if I was dirty, you think I'd keep bullshit around my house?
Right.
Oh, yeah, I got a Molotov cocktail here in the corner. There's a machine gun over there. They're used to dealing with these dumb right-wingers. That's, you know, and It usually works with them.
Yeah, but apparently, you know, you got those attacks in Paris, and those guys, their passports just magically drop on the ground.
Well, I caused them to shit their pants because they came over. Well, they see, I don't think they were out of my contact until after that ATF thing. And I told the one guy, we're sitting in my living room, and I said, you know, the funny thing about it, I had digital tape recorders all over the house that the minute they came in, they were running, and I got some real testimony on there. They all cried. Their eyes got as big as 50 cent pieces. Because, you know, anybody that does stuff, they're a bunch of jockeys, and they talk, and they say things they shouldn't say, you know.
Right.
Always have a tape recorder on you. Not a tape recorder, but a digital.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you're in a situation where you think it might be dangerous or you may be around agents or something, just stick it in your pocket and turn it on. I always go with digital tape recorders.
That's good advice to use.
Yeah, they're only, what, $30?
Yeah, it's not that much.
And they'll record for hundreds of hours, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and carry pepper spray. Don't carry a gun. The guns are what get the guys in trouble, because most of the guys are in prison or in jail. They had the guns, but they didn't have the guts to use them. When it came down to the wire, they didn't use them.
Right.
I don't go around with guns. I never have. But pepper spray, I can take care of most problems. Or a knife, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think that'll do for us tonight.
Well, you got enough to give me 20 years in the electric chair now.
Hey, me too. I'm no saint.
Okay. Okay, well, stay in touch.
All right. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. I once in a while, I like to do it. I don't do it all the time, but it's fun.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Good luck.
Thanks, Tommy.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
A bureaucrat woke up one day with nothing much to do. He tried to put his street clothes on, but couldn't find his shoes.